Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. All right. Well, it is now or never. It is time for Reclaiming the Republic. And the way we really differentiate this show from every other show, because sometimes I make the mistake of going down these observations that, you know, all these other conservative entertainers who offer you nothing other than their witty observations. They're not offering you the tangible solutions and the tools and helping you understand these tools that are available to you in the Constitution to take back this government. They can't reclaim the Republic because they, too, are a part of the problem. And they won't admit it. And I mean, it's kind of like, you know, almost everybody's suffering from this thing called conservatism. They don't recognize that even though they believe and they feel good about their positions, that they're on the moral high ground. Well, the freedom and the liberty that is offered under this Constitution allows everybody to somewhat feel good about whatever moral high ground that they have and whatever moral high ground they're standing on. Even the left, until what they do violates the rights of others or causes harm directly. You know, in other words, unless they've been sinned, they're sinning, they're doing something, unless their actions are actually causing harm, taking away your rights and so forth. But I'm telling you, when you look at conservatives equally think that, well, we need to regulate. It's one thing for your local county to become a blue county. Blue counties are legitimate and legal. The federal government cannot create a blue county. The state should not be able to create a blue state. Should not. But they can. Because the U.S. Constitution doesn't necessarily apply to them. And the problem that we have with states is the way they've been able to ebb and flow regarding different directions of tyranny, whether it be compelling you to do bad things or compelling you to do or forcing you to do good things or keeping you from being able to do things. The point is that we need to really we need to confine our state governments into general governments, very much like the federal government, to keep them on the strategic side in working with the other states and working with strategies and so forth, but keeping them out of the knickers of our everyday life, of what's being taught in the classroom. We don't even want that to happen at the state. You know, the state legislators have a great responsibility and a great authority over the U.S. Constitution, and yet they do nothing to do it. To preserve it, nothing to protect it, nothing to serve you and your liberties. Excuse me. So we want to be clear here that all of these conservative entertainers, they're a part of the problem. And anybody that calls themselves a conservative, unless you can actually say that you are fully constitutional, in other words, your position supports the Constitution, carte blanche. You don't cherry pick. Everything must be in compliance to the U.S. Constitution. And that means the state constitutions need to be in compliance as well. So with that, let's just plunge forward because we got a lot of topics and stuff to go through. We were just getting into the Constitution and what it delegates or what the states delegated to the federal government regarding elections and voting. Why? Because we're in an election year, folks, and this is important. It's important what they can actually touch. What kind of regulations can they make? So what we want to do is we basically want to let you know that this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions on what it takes to get our nation back, to get our Constitution back, to preserve our liberties. So with that, we've got a couple of quick endorsements we want to make. Of course, do not forget to get your subscription. If you have not already gotten your subscription to the Wyoming Conservative Chronicle, then go get it. Go get you some. Get that paper and start looking and actually take it in to your public forums and your meetings and so forth and say, why can't we have a newspaper like this? You can. And as we hope to actually bring the proprietor on so that you can actually hear what and how they're doing this and how you should be able to do this as well. Anywho, who knows? Maybe they have the ability and the reach to, you know, actually start creating one for each state so that they can become a mogul on the Constitution. How about that? Wouldn't that be awesome? Anyway, as you know, we also support Ad Local. And as you've heard me say, Ad Local has now created a template. And if you go to, I don't have the link. I may have the link up there. If it's not, we'll have it up there tomorrow. So go to the website and look for the Ad Local campaign website so that you can actually look at the template and go, wow, okay, this, all I have to do is fill in the blanks, give them the photos and all of that type of stuff. And they can quickly, so time is of the essence when it comes to getting the message out and when it comes to being on top. If you want to control the narrative, you have to lead in getting the information up and out to the people. Because there are all sorts of opportunities where somebody can say, well, I had it up first. I was the one talking about it first. You heard me say it first. And I guess bragging rights are important when it comes to ideas that are just common knowledge or things that we should just be doing. But it's not about really who's first. It's about who's leading, who is actually having these conversations and who is driving these conversations. And one of the things I will tell you right now is that if you are working with us, you will be leading in your campaign and you will be putting your competitors on their heels because they're not leaders. They're out there using what they want to, you know, this the sales job, that spin that, you know, just grabs your heart and says, yes, I vote for that person because they use the word conservative in every sentence. I mean, this is how pathetic we are, folks. This is why when you actually start challenging them on their vision, their leadership, and their understanding of the Constitution, and just how far out of alignment we are regarding our Constitution, this is why it's so important. So if you're looking and you want to run, and if you're already running, you don't have a campaign site, check out Ad Local. Our comment line, 425-270-5416. And while we're still in the first segment, taking a deep breath, it is time to get back into what we call the comprehensive constitutional positions to campaign on for county, state, and federal elections. What we're covering right now is the voting in a Republican form of government. Now, first off, we have to understand a Republican form of government isn't just a representative government, but it is one based on laws. And the Constitution actually has some powers delegated to the federal government. So that's why when we went into the end of our last episode, we were reading the Constitution, and so what I want to do is I want to re-emphasize. I've got Article 1, Section 4 right here in front of me, and we're going to reread this because these are the specific roles and responsibilities regarding voting that the general government can actually say they have jurisdiction over. I want you to understand what they can do and what they can't do. Okay? Now, this is what it says. The times, places, and manners of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the state legislature thereof. Now, I'm going to stop right here. Senators, at the time of this Constitution, was actually managed by the state legislators. In other words, they would assemble and they would vote and they would determine who would be representing them in the Senate. That representing them, the state, not just them as a small cadre of people. They were to ensure that the Senate actually protected the rights and sovereignty of the state. The 17th Amendment completely perverted that, but that's a different problem and a different issue. But this is the Section 4, and it actually says thereof, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations. Now, what are the regulations? Let's be very specific. The regulations that the state legislatures have is this: the times, places, and manner. In other words, is it going to be a vote by hand? Is it a vote? Is it a call out vote of going down the roll call? How do you vote? Yay, or I vote for this person. Because the manner of holding the election for your representation and for these measures is dictated. They can do that. They can tell you that you have a right or that everybody's going to do mail-in ballot. And any state that has done that has really injected and opened up a huge pot for corruption and election fraud, voting fraud, all of that type of stuff. If you live in a state that has physical voting in precincts where you have to sign in, you have to prove who you are, and then you go vote and you only get to vote once, that is a guaranteed honest and the more honest election than anything else. And the more manual and the more archaic it becomes, the more secure it becomes, and the better honest and the integrity of the election is secured far better. When they start allowing software, online stuff, and so forth. I mean, I'm an advocate for using technology, but I'm not an advocate for using technology that can actually be manipulated and so forth. In other words, I think that there's a way we can actually give people their ability to vote, and there has to be full checks, balances, and accountability, audits, and so forth. One of the big problems we have regarding our elections, and I'm going down a rat hole, but this is important. You do not have a right. Anywhere does it say a private or you have a constitutional right to have a secret ballot? The manner of voting is whether, you know, they have it by oral, by, you know, by petition, by ballot, or how, by chads, however they decide to let you do the voting process. The manner is the process, not the secrecy of that. There's no guarantee of secrecy. As a matter of fact, back in those days, it was wide open. Everybody knew how you voted. We will be right back after these two promos. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's be really clear here. This is the Constitution. These are the roles, responsibilities, and powers enumerated. In other words, this is the only thing that the federal government can play with. And as a matter of fact, to be upfront, this is something that was actually delegated to the state legislators. Section 4 states that the times, places, and manner of holding elections, in other words, you know, are they going to do it in a mass? You know, is it going to be done on a ballot? I can't emphasize enough, the manner does not give them the authority to determine the outcome. They cannot say, you will be the elector, you will be the elector, you will be the elector, or the party controls that. You've got to understand, in our Republican form of government, we have our own representations, and the members of the House of Representatives are our representatives, as well as the electors we choose to vote for us for president. They're our representatives. They are not the appointees of the state legislature. Too many people think that they have the power to appoint. They do not have the power to appoint, to actually dictate that these are the electors. The electors are people who come forward and say, vote for me, people of this congressional district. I will choose the best president that will serve us. And this is my criteria. This is how we'll do this. This is what it says again. The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. But the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations. In other words, these regulations that they have the power to make, identifying the time, place, and manner of holding the elections. Those are the things that they can alter, just those things. In other words, let's say that they choose to alter the manner, or they choose to alter the place. Instead of being at the precincts, being at the sheriff's or the county. And 9 times out of 10, why would Congress even care? Why would Congress even dictate those types of things? Unless there was a national emergency, unless we were in wartime or something like that, they may actually choose a time and place that would be more secure, safer, or what have you. Who knows? They may actually even have the power, because that's one of the things that they possibly could do, is they could postpone the election or they could expedite the election. But the fact is that there has to be a really good reason why they would want to do it, because it would be viewed by the states and the state legislatures as manipulative and or, you know, meddling in state affairs. The final part of this is, and again, as I said in our previous episode, there's a but here, prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, but the Congress may at any time alter these regulations, except as to the places of choosing senators. In other words, the senators, or the choosing of senators for Congress, only the state legislatures have control of that very specific place. Because that was in the Constitution, that the state legislatures were the ones to choose that. So 9 times out of 10, they would always choose their chambers, and they would convene in a special election of choosing their senators. And so that's why Congress was not to be able to manipulate that, because it would be perceived as the Senate being able to manipulate and preserve their seats or what have you. So that is the very first time voting and the elections is, you know, delegated or identified, defined in the Constitution. The next portion, or the next time elections is defined, is in Article 2, Section 1. And we've already gone through Article 2, Section 1 regarding the Electoral College. And basically it says right here, and I'm just highlighting this, that the Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes, which day shall be the same throughout the United States. So in other words, Congress may determine the time of choosing. In other words, the date when we all vote, and the date that they are all to vote, and when those votes have to be received, and so forth. But they cannot dictate party control. They cannot dictate anything else. Do not start confusing all of these, you know, winner take all of this as a part of what we've accepted as constitutional. It is not here so far, folks. They have no authority to determine, you know, that a popular vote can actually swing. No. It is repugnant in a Republican form of government that you would lose your representation because of a democracy form of government. Do you understand what I just said? A democratic form of government is mob rule, 50% plus one. And if they actually change your representation in a Republican form of government to concede that a popular vote would dictate, then they basically and unconstitutionally change the form of government that is guaranteed by our Constitution as a Republican form of government. The 14th Amendment now gets into the election process as well, and this is representation and apportionment. It doesn't get into the actual election process, but what it does say is that Congress if a state chooses not to allow a U.S. citizen, because at this point in time, all blacks now who were slaves and under the jurisdiction of the United States now became U.S. citizens, as accordance with Section 1. So all states that chose not to allow them to vote would lose their apportionment of representation in the House of Representatives for each person that they didn't allow. So in other words, if all blacks were not allowed to vote, now, this was based on the 14th Amendment. It was a punitive measure. And most people think that the 14th Amendment was this huge overreach trying to step into the state's knickers. No, it was basically this realization that the civil rights of the citizens were under duress. The civil rights were actually being trampled upon by these states. And that the states, they made it so that the states could not take away your right to bear arms, your right to speech, your right to assemble, your right to petition, and all these other rights. Because you got to remember, the Bill of Rights only applied to the federal government. And so now all rights and privileges guaranteed to a U.S. citizen, these privileges and immunities guaranteed to U.S. citizens, were now to be protected from state laws. So the state cannot make or enforce any law that abridges those privileges and immunities. So now that they've protected these citizens, your right to vote may be infringed, but the state's ability to receive apportionment, in other words, representation. So a populated state such as... Let me just use Georgia as an example. You know, Georgia has some decent population. And so Georgia, if it banned the voting of blacks at any point in time based on this amendment, then all of those people that would no longer be able to vote, they would lose the apportionment for that. So this is all based on, okay, you have this many citizens, but because you don't let this percentage, then you lose that percentage of representation. It was a form of punishment to the states, still letting states have some level of control, but not full compulsion. They didn't. So this concept that the 14th Amendment was this thing where the states lost all their rights and they became, subjects. No, that's not true. What happened was what was necessary to happen to keep states from being able to oppress and suppress black folks and or anybody that they chose was either an outlier, an enemy, whatever you wanted to categorize these folks. The 14th Amendment was a pure level of protection for all U.S. citizens and only U.S. citizens. So the 15th Amendment was the next amendment where there was a change and addressed elections or voting. And the 15th Amendment states this, that the right of U.S. citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on an account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. So in other words, now they created this qualification that all these people had a right to vote. So as you start listing up what they have this role, responsibility, and these rights and protections, there's nowhere in here where they've allowed parties to seize control of the Electoral College process. Nowhere. Not yet. It hasn't been brought up. It's not in the 12th Amendment. We've proven that there's nowhere that the party is being mentioned. Okay, so the next time that they bring up an election change, which is the 19th Amendment, that the right of citizens of the United States, now each time they mention citizens, not just a person, not a person in living here, and not an inhabitant, you have to be a full-fledged citizen. So that's a consistent thing, that the Constitution keeps on pointing to, that the right of the U.S. citizen of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States by any state on account of sex or gender. Okay, so now it's, what they're doing is they're extending the right to all of these different qualifications. At first it was, blacks, or I should say, those who came from servitude, because it could have been Irish. It could have been Chinese. Up in the Pacific Northwest, they had Chinese slaves and so forth. And so it doesn't matter if you were, the color, if you were under servitude and denied this right, but now you became a U.S. citizen, you had a right to vote. And if they were not allowed to vote, then the state would lose its apportionment. That was the consequence of that. Now, every U.S. citizen has these rights to vote, and the state can't do anything, right? Okay, so now, because the state could create these poll taxes, up until this point, poll taxes were still legitimate. You know, the state to basically say, okay, you can put in your 2 cents, but before you put in your 2 cents, you have to give us 2 bits. You have to pay your taxes because you have to prove that you actually have interest in playing with government. So the next amendment is the 24th Amendment, and it states this: the right of the citizen of the United States to vote in any primary or other election or president or vice president or electors for president or vice president or for senator or representative in Congress, in other words, all of the federal types of offices and elections, shall not be abridged or denied by the United States or any state by any reason of failure to pay any poll tax or other tax. So in other words, if you don't pay your taxes, now you still have a right to vote. If you don't, even if the IRS basically seizes everything, you can still vote. So now they've moved this other bar. So we'll be right back and get into the next and final amendment to the Constitution regarding elections. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google Donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so moving forward, this is really important that we cover all of these things so we can show you what is actually in the Constitution. So these are the only things that, if it arises under the Constitution, then that's it. Now, where is it that they talk about race? Or because we were talking about elections and contributions and so forth. Where is the contributions and the affections and the influences, endorsements? Where is that in the Constitution? It's not. As a matter of fact, the federal government does not arise under the Constitution. So federal election laws that control contributions and so forth shouldn't be in the federal government. They have no jurisdiction over these things. So the states can easily draw these lines and actually invoke these things we already talked about in making elections local. We are a Republican form of government. And if you stand up and say, we're guaranteed this by the Constitution, and we do not have to allow or accept a democratic form of government, a mob rule to actually rule us. As a matter of fact, history and the framers, the Constitution, the ratification base actually prove, and they conflict with the concept of allowing democracies to gain foothold in America. We were designed, and in that design, we were protected from democracies in America, just to be clear. because they were very clear at why they had these majorities of requiring two-thirds of this to ensure that a simple mob majority, mob rule, could not inflict punishment and oppress people that, you know, were it perceived in the slightest of a minority. You know, 49%, that's all it takes, right? Anyway, the 26th Amendment basically states this, and this was another extension of offering the right to vote to 18-year-olds, because prior to that, you had to be 21. And it says, the right of citizen of the United States who are 18 years of age or older to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of age. Now, I believe that there's nowhere in here where they say that you cannot be denied the right to vote because of literacy. Does that make sense? So you can't be denied because of your age, but as long as you're 18 years or older, and they go after people for, you know, that you can't discriminate over gender and over these other things. But why can't we discriminate over literacy? Why can't we say you have to at least understand the Constitution? Because when we start placing context and supporting the and actually, we should start demanding that our representatives actually take a test. You've heard me talk about this before, lots of this. We have to start demanding that our public servants can pass a test, that they understand the Constitution, so that when we tell them, you just violated the Constitution, they can't argue with you. They basically have to say, yeah, but the problem is we don't even understand, or there's not enough people to say, hey, this is against the Constitution. This is why we have all of these problems. Because nobody is complying to the Constitution, and nobody will comply to the Constitution if they don't understand it. So stupidity and illiteracy favors this Bolshevik revolution. This is why we're so close to the precipice, my friends. This is why. And so one of the other things that we need to get into is the counting of the votes and making sure that the counting of the votes is maintained in a Republican form. In other words, we cannot allow a bureaucracy or government officials. As a matter of fact, we would be served better in removing bureaucracies and actually, because I think you'll find plenty of people in the community that would be happy to contribute to the counting of the ballots and do it by hand, in doing it by hand instead of allowing a machine to do it where software can actually manipulate that data as soon as it's in its controls. Understanding these processes, because everything is a process, right? I mean, everything we do is a process. So understanding processes and putting, you know, our arms around what these processes are helps us actually improve the processes so that we can actually have better integrity in our elections instead of less. But as you understand the paradigm of the left, as I constantly tell you, the left believes that the ends justify the means. If they have to kill you, if they have to break the law, it doesn't matter. They don't have to have morals. What they are doing is more important, and they will do what they have to implement what they have to do. Even if they have to lie, steal, kill, it doesn't matter. The ends justify the means. So we all have to start having the open and honest dialogue to say, how important is it to have the election called, you know, as soon as the poll closes? Well, let's have a, you know, if it's going to be done by software, then you're basically creating a vulnerability and taking on risk that is unwarranted. There is no need to where we actually have to have that information immediately. The need is a sensation or a desire that we want immediate fulfillment. People can't go a week with the anxiety of going, who won? Why does it matter? The person's not going to take office for a while, right? I mean, we're weeks away before the president even gets sworn in or these other offices get filled. So isn't having the scrutiny of whether this person should have voted or why did this person vote twice, and making sure that the process of the voting was done without fraud. Go read the Landslide Linden historical account of what happened in Texas. There was a town in Texas where Lyndon B. Johnson, in running for Senate, didn't report its poll numbers. It didn't report the numbers of its election. And it was late, and all of a sudden they said, hey, let's go out to this town because they haven't reported. Come to find out that the town was so cooperative, that they were all so supportive of Lyndon B. Johnson, that they all showed up in alphabetical order and voted in alphabetical order and age order. In other words, when they went out to audit and to get the, you know, the registry for that town to count its votes, it was a landslide. Everybody voted for Lyndon B. Johnson, and those who signed in the registry happened to show up in alphabetical order. So what really happened was the shenanigans by the pollmen, because they knew that they needed every vote from that town to swing the election for Lyndon B. Johnson to win. So they had to go through the night actually filling in a new registry everybody's names, and they did it alphabetically because they just couldn't do it random, because they didn't want a chance. Well, did we already count for that name? So they just, from the top, and they cross it off, and they boom, 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 and they didn't think anybody would be the wiser. But it goes down in history as being recorded as the, you know, one of the greatest shenanigans in helping basically somebody who had the paradigm, the ends justify the means. Lyndon B. Johnson was a communist that felt that the ends justified the means, and the people that wanted him elected and running this nation so that he could do the social engineering and the crap that he did to us. You know, as we start getting to this point of realizing just how misled we have been and how bad these public servants are, I understand we have a lot to get over and we've got a lot to get done. There are a lot of people that want their pound of flesh. There's a lot of people that, you know, want these people to pay. I tell them, and I tell you, that if it makes you feel any better to dig these people up and burn them in effigy, okay. If that's what gets you to closure. But we've got to get there, because we've got a lot to do. We're running out of time. And you hear me say this all the time. Let's get going. Let's start actually acting. Anyway, we need to also focus now, and the turn is, now we're going to focus on property rights. We have to start reinforcing property rights, because as I've told you, the two objects, just as I told you, in many different arguments, reading the Federalist Papers and so forth, the two objects of government is to protect life and property. And so property is huge in this Republican form of government, in our hybrid constitutional Republican government. And so let's start off with one of the first and most heir apparent, because this is the key to global subjugation, money and who controls it. Now, they understood the importance of money, its printing of, and its control of. To be clear, the Constitution delegates very specific powers. And so let's do what we usually do, and let's go to Article 1, and I'm going to turn down to Section 8, and it talks about money. And it says, you know, the Congress shall have the power to collect taxes, blah, 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 blah. That's the preamble. There's really no general powers there. So the first power that they have is to actually borrow money on the credit of the United States. But they cannot borrow money on the credit of the United States for things that the United States has no authority to borrow money for. So in other words, if they take debt for social engineering, like welfare, for healthcare, for energy, anything that is not an enumerated power, then that debt is unconstitutional, it's fraudulent. And the people that are perpetrating that, both on both sides of that debt, China or whatever country, is saying, yeah, here, buy some of our debt. We want to be a part of this big defrauding of the American people. That's what we've got, folks. So they don't have the authority to just borrow money. They have the faith and the credit of the United States for those things enumerated, right? And so they also heard right here, the Congress shall have the power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coin and the fixed standards of weights and measures. Coin money is physical money. The Constitution empowers them to create and manage the value of physical money. We'll get into that as soon as we come right back, because people have to understand inflation and what is the root of inflation. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so clearly, the federal government was enumerated the power of printing and creating physical money, coins, and actually regulating the value thereof. And the way you regulate the value, the way inflation occurs, has everything to do with how much is in circulation. In other words, if you want to make the coins worth less, you put more into circulation. If you want the coins and value of the coin itself in our currency to have greater value, you take coins out of circulation. Because when there's a shortage of coins, the value of, you know, what they can buy goes up dramatically. In other words, all of a sudden, you know, when there's very few silver dollars, the value of that silver dollar goes much further. And vice versa. The more silver dollars, then you've got more people competing. They're willing to throw more money at it. And the price of things actually goes down, you know, or the value of things go down, because now you're paying more for, you know, something that you would have paid a lot less for if there wasn't so much currency in circulation. That is the premise of inflation. Inflation is based upon the quantity of currency in circulation. If the circulation goes up, it inflates the currency. Our currency gets inflated because of too much. So when we look at Article 1, Section 9, it kind of clarifies this whole point of consequences of spending. No money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law. What they just basically stated, and regular statements and accounts of the receipts and expenditures of all public money must be published from time to time. Well, for over 200 years, the federal government started spending money on things that nobody held them accountable for, on things that were unconstitutional, such as railroads, such as farmers, such as all this agriculture and these bailouts and roads and so forth that they started doing in ignoring their limitations. As soon as they started realizing, you know, if everybody just lets us spend, then we can start corrupting everybody. And they had this big smile on their face, and they said, this is a good thing. And everybody was none the wiser. And this is why we're in this situation, folks, because if you understand the Supremacy Clause, only laws that are in pursuant to the Constitution are legal. So in other words, appropriations made by law can only be done in those things that are pursuant or enumerated within the Constitution. Social engineering is not enumerated. All of this social engineering spending is all unconstitutional. The debt thereof is unconstitutional. This is why the majority of what the federal government is doing and all of that debt gets wiped away when we finally stand up and say, hold on, you have no authority to do any of this. You know, pull all this money back. You don't, and tell these countries, we're not paying this debt. You never had the constitutional legal standing to do this. Wow. A pin dropped, and everybody heard the shot that went around the world that America was being defrauded by enemies within and abroad. And the day we actually allow this to happen. So we have some things that we can do. And the first thing that has to be done, that has to be a part of your petitions in your petition network, is actually, I need to go back through this. So I'll try to do that tonight and identify some of the things that we kind of glossed over and said, hey, this is a petitionable item. You need to actually start petitioning over these issues. But these issues over property and so forth, these are definitely petitioning items. So what we want to do is just point out that there is one thing in Article 1, Section, what is it, Section 9, Subsection 7. No. Yeah, that's Section 9. That's against the restrictions on the federal government. The next one is Article 1, Section 10, Subsection 1, that states, no state shall coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. So in other words, the states are restricted from allowing electronic, crypto, and everything else. They are actually confined to this one thing, that they can only make it so that gold and silver coin are legal tender in payments of debt. So, states need to start passing laws that basically state that the federal government needs to start providing, instead of dollar bills and paper money with some no associated coin, all they need to do is start creating law that says the federal government must provide this, and they cannot go down crypto, they cannot go down this electric, they have to restore and get back to this for this state. And watch what happens, because all of a sudden, you know, the federal boat is going to start taking on money, or not money, water. It's going to start sinking, because they're going to realize that with all the money they have out there, the value of a $20 bill, or I should say a silver coin, is going to be several $20 bills. You know, one of the things I used to tell people, if you really want to check out how inflation has moved, you know, through our currencies, is go look at what a silver coin, or how many silver coins, so silver dollars, it took to purchase a Lincoln Continental back in the 50s when the Lincoln Continental first came out. Whenever it first came out, how many silver dollars did it take to buy that car? Now look at it today. How many silver dollars does it take to buy that car? Now, we can tell you that processes have improved and all sorts of things have really improved, but the value of that car, the perceived value of that car, has gone up astronomically. And if you actually look at the inflated value of money itself, it's gone up even more. Fact is, folks, they've been stealing from us blindly, because they've been able to basically inflate our currency without having to actually inject more gold and silver into our hands. Do you realize if the gold and silver was in our hands and all of a sudden we had an inflated currency and they said, well, we need to bring down this, the what's in circulation, people would hold it. Do you realize that people would actually take and remove, and there would be actually a shortage if the federal government was putting coins out? Because this has actually happened before. If they put coins out into circulation, what do people do? They collect them. They put them in their safes. They take them out of circulation. They go, hey, we got all these coins out there, but nobody's using them because they're sitting on them. And that's what happens. And so that's another way of removing currency. Force every dollar to get backed by silver and gold. And that's what the states have to do. They have to replace this, what Kennedy tried to stop, or Kennedy tried to, you know, ensure that there was a solid backing that Nixon ended up killing. Nixon, the Republican, ended up killing the backing for the dollar to allow the Federal Reserve to be able to manipulate us even more. Anybody that echoes in their minds that we need to audit the Fed does not understand the Constitution, because anybody that says we have to audit the Fed, all they're doing is legitimizing the Fed. The Fed is illegitimate. It has no constitutional authority under our Constitution to do what it's doing. And therefore, it must be dismantled and abolished, period. The same thing with all these other things, folks. That's what Republic Review does. So as we kind of move on, the petition that you need to consider, and you need to start actually moving forward with this stuff, is we need to start petitioning the state to pass a law to force the federal government from, one, going crypto, going electric, and force them back into backing the dollars with gold and silver. That they demand that with all the currency that they have in their state, they start delivering the gold and silver to back these dollars and so forth, that they must go back onto the gold standard. They had no authority to get away from it. And watch what happens. Taking on water, folks. We're taking on water. Anyway, so states can make, and they can only make, again, only gold and silver as these tenders and as legal tender payment within the state. Federal government power, or the federal government, has no power or capability to coin anything but physical currency. That's the whole point in reading all this to you folks. And maintaining physical currency is critical, because we already know the globalist plan is to take us into a cryptocurrency and move us completely away from actually having physical money. I just want you to understand, physical money is property. You should be able to go down to your bank and say, I want my property. I want to reside on my property. I want my property in my possession. And you should be able to. They have laws now that prevent you from doing that. And that is actually unconstitutional. And I can tell you, there was a case recently where a person took the federal government to court and said, I want my millions of dollars in my possession. And they won. And guess what? When they took that millions of dollars, they did it in gold or precious metal. And guess what? Now they have more millions of dollars, because as they play these manipulative games in basically inflating the currency, now they're even better leveraged. So folks, understanding these basic things helps us actually get and start putting pressure on the government to say, you've gone so far out, you have no idea. And we are going to hold you to this, and either you do this or we will replace you. This is why we start off at the counties, we work and sweep through the states, and forcing the states to become constitutional. Once we got states becoming constitutional, we've got states that are all in on Republic Review. This is how we do it, folks. And this is how you can do this. This is how you can start leading in your county or working with those that are. Get over your petty differences. Get over these little problems and self-interest that you may have. We have to start doing this, or our posterity will actually be speaking another language, and they will have no clue what individual liberty and individual sovereignty is. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.